This is Laura Dierda with the Becker Spine and Orthopedic Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Scott Sigmund, Chief Medical Officer of Ortho Laser Orthopedic Laser Centers and Team Physician for the UMass Lowell in North Chelmsford, Massachusetts. Dr. Sigmund, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Oh, Laura, thank you for having me on. I'm very excited.
Before we dive into the questions, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Sure. I always like to describe myself as the original opioid-sparing orthopedic surgeon, healer of knees and shoulders left and right, hashtag follow the fro, host of the Ortho Show podcast, as well as chief medical officer and founder of Ortho Laser Orthopedic Laser Centers. I am a sports medicine orthopedic surgeon in private practice just north of Boston.
Well, fantastic. I think, you know, I'm ready to have a really exciting conversation with you today and love to hear more about everything that you've been experiencing and seeing on the forefront of orthopedics. So first off, what are the top three trends in healthcare that you're following today?
Yeah, I think the number one thing that seems to be at everyone's concern at this point is sort of private practice consolidation. I just read something the other day where nearly 70% of private practices now have either been swallowed up by large hospital systems or become part of another corporation. And I think that that consolidation process has become even more important in the setting of rolling out of this pandemic. And one of the things that I find, you know, quite fascinating is actually private equity and sort of this vertical integration of best practices, cost savings, where their physicians can have actual ownership in your destiny with other like-minded, efficient, high-quality practices. And I think that really there are three leaders out there. There's Varsity, there's Thurston Group with USOP, and then Spire as well, who we're really seeing a significant uptick in the interest in private equity in particular.
Got it. So you see really the private equity and the employment aspect of things, you know, being a key trend that you're following and something to really watch out for. You know, how do you see that playing out over the next decade or so? What do you think will happen versus what, you know, would be best for the healthcare system if you're looking at, you know, wanting high quality, low cost care?
Yeah, I mean, I want to be surrounded by people that are thinking the same way, that have an interest as well. I mean, here in Massachusetts, for example, the Brigham and Mass General Hospital got together and put together the concept of a $2 billion reach out to the community, if you will, where they're trying to expand into the community as well, and potentially putting ASCs and surgery centers close to other existing ASCs. And I think especially in a hospital system where they have a lot of interest at heart. For me in particular, that's been in a private practice orthopedic group for over 30 years, I really like the idea of being able to continue working with other orthopedic surgeons. And that's why I think private equity in particular is going to have a major uptick over the next 2 years. I really think that we're going to see an exponential curve growth of independent private practices seeking out the possibility of private equity.
Got it. That's really interesting to hear and, you know, exciting to know how the field will develop. Now, I'm wondering, you know, looking at the device and technology side of things, what are some of the most promising technologies in development right now? And is there anything on the flip side that you think is all hype?
That's a great question. I want to go back to one other trend, if you don't mind, Laura, and that
sure.
is what I see coming forwards is really the rise of what has been coined by Matthew Ray Scott, who's a dear friend of mine, is the orthopreneur. Again, sort of as we come out of this pandemic, you know, out of despair comes opportunities. The ways in which we practice medicine, I think, will be forever changed. And so as the host of the Ortho Show podcast, I've had the pleasure of having entrepreneurs, orthopedic surgeons that are really seeing unique ways in which we're going to change how we do medicine. For example, Mike Grywe, who from OrthoLive and the telemedicine platform, his business has exploded as we've come out of the pandemic. Danny Goyle from Precision OS, for example, which is a virtual reality surgical training company he paired up with some gaming partners and really has developed a really remarkable Oculus-based platform for residents and surgeons to be able to learn new surgical techniques. You've got Vin Dasa and Alok Sharon, who started this new social media platform called Doc Social, where we can now digitally communicate with industry, doctors, patients all across the board in a really unique way. So I think in particular, entrepreneurship is something that's going to be a really major development as a trend in healthcare.
Got it. That's fascinating and fantastic to hear, especially, you know, when thinking about how important those independent physicians are in entrepreneurship, especially amongst orthopedics and spine, you know, really has a big place, it sounds like, in the future of healthcare and medicine.
Completely agree. Now, with regards to promising devices, I really see that there's two things that really sort of come to mind for me. One I sort of term is OR guidance. And what do I mean by that? I mean robotics, patient-specific instrumentation, artificial intelligence. How is that going to play into what we're doing within the orthopedic world and surgery in particular? And one of the lines from Rand Schwarzkopf, who's another guest of ours from the Ortho Show, says, do you want to get into an Uber with a dude who's holding a AAA map, or do you want to make sure that you've got a GPS? And so I think that what's really interesting, the majority of joint replacements are still being done in the United States by doctors that do probably less than 100 total joints a year. And it's my opinion that the guidance that's out there with robots or patient-specific instrumentation, the things that can help us to be better, will actually bear out to show improved outcomes, especially for these types of doctors. That's number one. Number two, I'd be remiss if, as the chief medical officer of OrthoLaser, if I didn't talk about laser technology. And, you know, the opioid crisis in particular has become the forgotten epidemic in a worldwide pandemic. And, you know, we're really amazed at OrthoLaser at what we're doing. And my job in particular as the chief medical officer is to really try to educate doctors and patients on the successes of laser, or PBMT, also known as photobiomodulation, as an alternative treatment option for acute and chronic pain, as well as inflammation. So, I mean, as we roll out of this pandemic again, you know, the doctors are seeking out potential new revenue sources. Patients are seeking out alternative options, perhaps to surgery, definitely wanting to try to avoid opioids, perhaps prescriptive medications and injections, especially when dealing with injuries and painful conditions. So that's definitely another technology that we see is really going to be very promising. And it was from that use of OrthoLaser for acute pain and inflammation that we've also had real success with the use of laser for both acute and chronic COVID, with one of our most recent trials being published in a peer-reviewed journal showing the successes for acute COVID. And now the long haulers are also getting great success with laser treatment as well. So fascinating technology, something that I think that will really revolutionize how we treat pain and inflammation moving forward.
Got it. Wow, that's really interesting to hear that as applications with some of the COVID patients and those who are overcoming symptoms still. You know, I know there's a lot out there and a lot of people who are still suffering. So it's interesting to hear that that is part of, you know, a potential treatment for them.
Yeah, completely agree. You know, as far as the hype about promising devices, I mean, again, I'm a believer in regenerative medicine. And, you know, I think the problem is that there's still sort of the wild, wild west out there. And a lot of claims are being made by various companies and doctors and clinics. And, you know, fortunately, we have, you know, really outstanding physicians such as Donnie Buford and Steve Sampson, who are leaders in their field within regenerative medicine, who are helping to push the envelope so that we can see that these regenerative medicines do have anti-inflammatory effect and can really help with our patients' pain. The question is going to become, you know, from sorting out the hype versus what is reality, breaking through so that the insurance companies will reimburse for these types of treatments. I think it's ultimately going to come down to large pharma that's going to have to go through the rigid FDA approval process, for example, for like an amniotic tissue, which may show that there's significant improvement in patient outcomes. But hopefully that will be borne out over time. I definitely think it's coming, but I think we have to still reserve judgment.
Got it. That makes a ton of sense. Now, before we wrap up our conversation, I have one more question. What are you most excited about today and what makes you nervous?
Yeah, great question. So I think that as the original opioid-sparing orthopedic surgeon, I have to say anything that is proving the fact that opioid stewardship is working. So evidence-based medicine showing that we can safely and effectively operate on patients with good pain control by reducing the needs for opioids perioperatively is what I'm really excited about. I'd like to throw out some kudos to Dr. Asif Ilyas, as well as the Rothman Opioid Foundation, which has been set up in Philadelphia specifically to help us really understand and drive evidence-based medicine to show that opioid reduction is safe and effective for our patients. And probably the thing that makes me the most nervous, Laura, is absolutely, am I going to be able to continue to independently practice medicine in the way in which I've been trained?
Got it. You know, when you say that, are you going to be able to continue in practicing independent medicine? What do you mean by that in the way that you've been trained?
Well, I mean, you know, I take a lot of time and energy to be trained, you know, through our residencies and fellowships, and then there's continuing medical education, and we're always honing our skill set to be better and do as well as we can for the care of our patients. And the question is Big Brother going to be around pushing us and telling us what we can use and what we can't use? And so I want to try and maintain my independence if that means circling the wagons with other medical groups or other orthopedic groups that are similar minded as me, that's something that I would be very passionate about. I want to make sure that as a clinician, as a physician that has a responsibility and respect from my patients, that I'm providing the best possible care and being able to make those decisions.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. And I'm wondering, you know, when you look at some of the different areas that may be imposing restrictions, do you see, you know, is it insurance companies? Is it the federal government? Is it other healthcare trends or pressures that are coming in that are, you know, making it more challenging for you as an independent physician? What do you see as being really the driver of some of that change there?
All of those things, right? So, for example, my local hospital just became part of a larger hospital group, and I wanted to try out the new BioRes collagen implant for rotator cuff surgery, which is showing significant promise. And so previously, I would have had to call my medical device person down in the operating room, and we basically make a phone call and we make it happen. Nope, this time I had to fill out a 3-page requisition down to the Boston area to determine whether or not they would give us permission to be able to use this. And so then the insurance companies, you know, the peer-to-peer reviews that were required to be able to make the decisions as to what treatment you're going to offer your patients. And then ultimately, you know, as far as other groups who are sort of pressuring us to help make decisions. So I guess I'm nervous about the ability, and I get a sense that we're being pushed around a little bit more than ever before as far as our ability to make clinical decisions for our patients.
Got it. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Sigmund, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. This has been a really fascinating discussion, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Lark. Thank you so much for having me on.